held several of them hostage for a while. More were killed, and then the SWAT teams went in, and he was killed. And of course, that's all over the news today. And the perspective that we're going to have is probably not going to be the same as the perspective of the rest of the world. Look at Judges 17. Judges 17 says, there was a man of the hill country of Ephraim whose name was Micah. And he said to his mother, the 1,100 pieces of silver which were taken from you. All right, so right there we know something. She's missing 1,100 pieces of silver. Somebody had stolen 1,100 pieces of silver from her. And he mentions it. Well, that 1,100 pieces of silver which were taken from you, about which you uttered a curse in my hearing. So she'd pronounced some curse on whoever took it, I suppose. Behold, the silver's with me. I took it. Well, what do you think about this? Well, here's a guy who's stealing from his own mother, but he did confess. Okay, so, all right. So his mother said, blessed be my son by the Lord. Well, she apparently cursed him, but now she's blessing him. But okay, she's forgiving, so maybe that's a good thing. He then returned the 1,100 pieces of silver to his mother, and his mother said, I wholly dedicate the silver from my hand to the Lord for my son to make a graven image. Wait a minute. Oh, that's one of the Ten Commandments, not to make one, you know, a graven image. This doesn't sound good. And a molten image. Now, therefore, I'll return them to you. So, okay, who do we look to and say this is a good example? Kind of hard to find it. Verse 4. So when he returned the silver to his mother took 200 pieces of silver and gave them to the silversmith, who made them into a graven image and a molten image, and they were in the house of Micah. So she's had it made into a graven image and a molten image, and they're in his house. So now they're both idolaters. And then the man Micah had a shrine, and he made an ephod and household idols and consecrated one of his sons that he might become his priest. Now, this man is not a Levite, and he's got a son, and he just says, you be my priest. Well, who are supposed to be the priests? The Levites, and not just any Levite. The Levites who were descendants of Aaron. Well, in those days, there was no king in Israel. Every man did what was right in his own eyes. And that's a phrase we hear a few times in the book of Judges, particularly as we get to the end of the book of Judges. And as you get to the end of the book of Judges, in the stories that you read, it becomes harder and harder to find somebody that you can look to and say, that's the good guy. That's the guy who is on the Lord's side. You'll see conflict. You'll see desperate situations. Horrible things happen. And yet, it's hard to see either side, any side, that's really on the Lord's side. Let's come on down. Verse 7. There was a young man from Bethlehem in Judah, of the family of Judah, who was a Levite, and he was staying there. And then the man departed from the city, from Bethlehem in Judah, to stay wherever he might find a place. And as he made his journey, he came to the hill country of Ephraim, to the house of Micah, who has the idols, and who has his own son being a priest. And Micah said to him, where do you come from? And he said to him, I'm a Levite from Bethlehem in Judah, and I'm going to wherever I may find a place. Micah said to him, dwell with me and be a father and a priest to me, and I'll give you 10 pieces of silver a year, a suit of clothes, and your maintenance. So the Levite went in. And it's tempting to think, now we've got our good guy. Well, at least he's a Levite, but he's not a descendant of Aaron that we know of. But he's a Levite, and he's going to be a priest. That's better than the guy's own son being a priest, isn't it? Of course, he wants him to be his own personal private priest. Well, and the Levite agrees to that. Well, okay, we come on down, and verse 11, the Levite agreed to live with the man, and the young man became to him like one of his sons. So Micah consecrated the Levite, and the young man became his priest and lived in the house of Micah. Micah said, now I know that the Lord will prosper me, seeing I have a Levite as priest. Chapter 18, verse 1. In those days, there was no king in Israel. And in those days, the tribe of the Danites was seeking an inheritance for themselves to live in, for until that day, an inheritance had not been allotted to them as a possession among the tribes of Israel. So the sons of Dan sent from their whole family 5 men out of their whole number, valiant men from Zorah and Eshtaol, to spy out the land and to search it. And they said to them, go, search the land. And they came to the hill country of Ephraim, to the house of Micah, and lodged there. And when they were near the house of Micah, they recognized the voice of the young man. They know this guy that came up, the Levite. They recognized his voice, and they turned aside and said to him, who brought you here? What are you doing in this place? What do you have here? And he said to them, well, thus and so has Micah done to me, and he has hired me, and I've become his priest. And they said to him, inquire of God, please, that we may know whether our way on which we are going will be prosperous. And the priest said to them, go in peace. Your way in which you are going has the Lord's approval. So the 5 men departed, came to Laish. Laish is way up in the north, up above the Sea of Galilee. And they saw the people who were in it living in security after the manner of the Sidonians, quiet and secure, for there was no ruler humiliating them and for anything land. In other words, they weren't having to pay tribute to anybody. And they were far from the Sidonians, so they don't have any protection from anybody. Had no dealings with anyone. They came back to their brothers at Zorah and Eshtaol. Their brothers said to them, what do you report? And they said, well, arise, let us go up against them. For we have seen the land. Behold, it's very good. Will you sit still? Do not delay. Go, enter, possess the land. When you enter, you'll come to a secure people with a spacious land. For God has given it into your hand, a place where there's no lack of anything that's on the earth. So then from the family of the Danites, from Zorah and from Eshtaol, 600 men armed with weapons of war set out. And when they went up and camped at Kiriath Jearim in Judah, therefore they called the place Mahad-Nedan to this day. Behold, it is west of Kiriath Jearim. And they passed from there to the hill country of Ephraim and came to the house of Micah. And the 5 men who went to spy out the country of Laish answered and said to their kinsmen, now it's not just 5, they've got a whole army with them. And they say, do you know that there are in these houses an ephod and household idols and a graven image and a molten image? Now therefore consider what you should do. Finally, we've got some good guys. Some guys who have heard about the idols in that house and they're going to go in and eradicate the idols, right? They turned aside there and came to the house of the young man, the Levite, to the house of Micah and asked him of his welfare. And the 600 men armed with their weapons of war who were of the sons of Dan stood by the entrance of the gate. The 5 men who went up to spy out the land went up and entered there and took the graven image and the ephod and household idols and the molten image. And while the priest stood by the entrance of the gate with the 600 men armed with weapons of war, and when these went into Micah's house and took the graven image, the ephod and the household idols and the molten image, the priest said to them, what are you doing? Good, he's going to stand up to these scoundrels who are going to come in and steal the idols. Wait a minute, he's protecting the idols. Well, verse 19, they said to him, be silent, put your hand over your mouth, come with us, and be to us a father and a priest. Is it better for you to be a priest to the house of one man or to be a priest to a tribe and a family in Israel? And the priest's heart was glad. Oh, good, I got a better gig. he's going with the idols that they're stealing, and he's going to be a priest to them. And so the priest's heart was glad, and he took the ephod and household idols and the graven image and went among the people. So those guys who came and stole the idols, they're no good. And this priest we already know is no good. And verse 21 says, they turned and departed and put the little ones and livestock and the valuables in front of them. And when they had gone some distance from the house of Micah, the men who were in the houses near Micah's house assembled and overtook the sons of Dan. So Micah's come with his neighbors. And they cried out to the sons of Dan, who turned around and said to Micah, what's the matter with you? What have you assembled together that you have assembled together? And he said, you have taken away my gods, which I made, and the priest, and have gone away. And what do I have besides? So how can you say to me, what's the matter with you? Yeah, sure enough, they'd stolen his idols and his priests. Why, I guess he ought to go after them. And what? If his idols were gone, he should have said, good riddance. So it goes on in verse 25, the sons of Dan said to him, do not let your voice be heard among us, lest fierce men fall upon you and you lose your life with the lives of your household. So the sons of Dan went on their way, and when Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he turned and went back to his house. And then they took what Micah had made and the priest who had belonged to him and came to Laish to a people quiet and secure and struck them with the edge of the sword, and they burned the city with fire. There was no one to deliver them because it was far from Sidon. They had no dealings with anyone. It was in the valley, which is near Beth Rehob, and they rebuilt the city and lived in it. And it says that they called the name of the city Dan after the name of Dan, their father, who was born in Israel. However, the name of the city formerly was Laish. The sons of Dan set up for themselves the graven image, and Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh, he and his sons were priests to the tribe of the Danites until the day of the captivity of the land. So they set up for themselves Micah's graven image, which he had made all the time that the house of God was at Shiloh. And that's the whole story. And there's a lot of conflict, and there's idols, and priests, and all of that. And there's not a good guy in the bunch. You come to the next chapter, in chapter 19, and I'm not going to read the whole story, but I'll sum it up. There's a man whose concubine runs away from him. Well, she's his wife, and she runs away from him. Well, that's not good. He goes and chases her down. Is that good or not? Well, he wants her back. Is that good? Goes to her father's house. Her father invites him day after day after day just to stay there. So they stay there drinking and so on until the men of the city decide they want to have relations with this man. And the host says, no, don't do that. Here's my daughter and here's his concubine. Do to them whatever you please. And so they abuse them all night long until the concubine is left for dead on the doorstep. Here's a man. This is his concubine. It's his wife of a slave class, but a wife, and he allows this to be done to his wife. Is he a good man? Is the man who was so hospitable but allows him to do this to his daughter and his guest's concubine, is that a good man? People who did this to them, are they good people? Well, it's Benjamites who did it to them, and so the tribe of Judah is in an uproar about it, so they're going to go after the tribe of Benjamin to make them pay, and they get defeated twice before God allows the soldiers from Judah to defeat the tribe of Benjamin. And I think that's a reflection of the fact that, again, it's a situation where there's no good on any side of it. Now, you think about the situation that we have. In these stories, what we're talking about is we're talking about ungodly people doing ungodly things to ungodly people. And then you think about the situation in Orlando. And what you have is wicked people doing wicked things to wicked people. And it's not that we shouldn't care for them or love them. We should love all of them. But there's a narrative that in our society is already being painted that all, you know, innocent victims. And someone will say, well, yes, they may be gay, lesbian, whatever, but everybody's got sin. And yes, everybody's got sin, but this was not just some people who happened to be guilty of some sin. These are people who are in a place, if there's any such thing as a den of iniquity, this would just about have to be it. President Obama today made a speech, and he said, this is a place where this is a place of solidarity, of empowerment, and a place where people came to advocate for civil rights. What do you think he was talking about when he talks about solidarity? Well, solidarity in the LGBT movement. What do you think he was talking about when he was talking about empowerment? Empowerment to practice the homosexual sin. What do you think he was talking about when he was talking about civil rights? So what we're talking about is a situation where there were people in a place which is a place to celebrate sin, because that's what they're doing. But does that mean that the guy who went in and did what he did to them is the good guy? No, that's not a good guy either. He's doing this in the name of ISIS. He's doing this in the name of Islam. He's doing this in the name of his God. Does the God of the Bible want us to try to eradicate sexual sin or any other kind of sin by such means as this? There was a time, certainly in the Old Testament, where God's people, God gave instructions to the Israelites to fight wars, and where he used those wars to eradicate idolatry, and We remember the story of Phinehas, where Phinehas ran a spear through an Israelite man and a Midianite woman who were engaged in sexual sin. And that was something that God was pleased at, because God was in fact bringing a plague upon the people because of their sexual sin at the time. But at that time, God gave specific instructions to his people about the wars they were to fight and about the kinds of judgments they were to execute upon people, and execute, actually, put people to death. And he told them for what crimes to do it and those kinds of things. When we come to the New Testament, what we understand is we are in a war, but we're not in that kind of a war. Our warfare is against spiritual forces. We're not to go out and try to use weapons, whether it's rifles or guns or whatever. We're not to go out and use those kinds of things to try to force people to submit to the will of God. Let's look at Ephesians chapter 4. I'm sorry, Ephesians chapter 6. In Ephesians chapter 6, Paul says in verse 12, our wrestling is not against flesh and blood, but against the principalities, against the powers, against the world rulers of this darkness, against the spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. And then he goes ahead and talks about our armor. This guy who goes in there and he kills 50 people in the name of his God, he's not doing that in the name of the God of the Bible. The God of the Bible is not pleased with that. You look at all of these people, what you have is wicked people doing wicked things against wicked people. All of these people are people for whom Jesus died. All of these people, Jesus died on the cross so that every one of these people would have an opportunity to be forgiven of their sins. And any one of these people, whether it's a Muslim ISIS fighter, or whether it's a homosexual in a den of iniquity, or whoever it may be, if these people would turn from their sin and turn to the Lord, they would be welcomed with open arms. Just like the prodigal son. But what we're going to be called upon to do in